Girlfriend Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com on this Monday, March the 23rd on the West Coast, or Tuesday, March the 24th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zones. And then, of course, if you're in Mountain Time, which I believe is in effect now, then you are still on the 23rd, Monday night. Nice to have you with us. We've got a great show for you tonight. And, in fact, I'm going to bring my guest right on board. I got my broadcasting career started with this gentleman when he was broadcasting on Republic Network. And he now has his own show on Liberty News Radio 5 days a week from 4 to 7 p.m. Central Time. You can figure out those time zones if you want. And he's also on Oracle Broadcasting Network. He's the host of a very popular, long-running show called The American Awakening. He's a researcher. He is a pilot, believe it or not. He is a mortgage counselor or investment counselor, if you want to call him that. And he's my good friend, the guitar strumming and sometimes singing Michael Herzog. Michael, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Don Nikoloff. Well, I'm not sure about the mortgage consultant. There's not a lot of mortgages to be had out there these days. The only thing going on is mortgage loan modifications, if you can get those. But, you know, the market is a little bit down these days. I couldn't imagine why. Do you have any idea, Don?
No, I don't know. It must be that people just don't pay their bills, right? That's the story. They don't pay their bills, and then they end up having to live in the tents that they splurged on.
Is that the latest story? I don't know. I remember back in, 1973 when Richard Nixon came on TV and was telling people about inflation. He was blaming it on the housewives spending too much at the grocery store.
Oh, my gosh.
And, of course, people were naive at that time they bought it. Of course, a lot of them today are still naive and still buying it, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear that the mortgage industry is down so much, but then again, we know that it is in the the larger venues quite corrupt these days, and you know, the hydra that springs out of that that business is highly responsible for all the trillions of dollars that are being swindled out of derivatives and hedge funds, which basically, I'm hearing from a lot of people, aren't even on paper. They're just computer digits. Is that what you're hearing on your end from those in the know?
Well, I don't know. I couldn't speculate to exactly what it is. I just know that there's a lot of people at the top making a lot of money, and there's a lot of Americans down at the bottom losing their shorts. So however that game works, I know that Timothy Geithner and Ben Bernanke are going to be sitting in front of a congressional hearing, I believe, tomorrow. That should be interesting. I think it'll, you know, tie right in with when the attorney Vollmer for the SEC and also Linda Thompson was being grilled by Gary Ackerman, and I could have sworn, watching them sit there, that they had a hiney full of hemorrhoids. The way they were dancing around in the seat. Linda Thompson actually resigned the following week, and Vollmer took executive privilege and didn't answer any questions. But we will probably see the same thing happening tomorrow with Bernanke, and of course, not so much Bernanke, but Geithner has, I believe, got caught with his pants down because he's claiming that he didn't know anything about these payouts to AIG, this $165 million. But I find that interesting that all of his aides were working behind the scenes with AIG to construct this, along with Senator Chris Dodd, who was writing the legislation instructed by the Obama administration. So I guess that Timothy Geithner and his aides didn't speak for about 4 months. I don't know how that works exactly, but that's the drift I got. Timothy Geithner didn't know anything about it. And what's interesting is all these players in the game, Don, happened to come right out from the banking institutions that were losing all the money. So I don't, you know, connect the dots and you tell me, what's your perspective?
Well, first of all, on the AIG money, I heard that those payouts went through the London branch. Now, I've been trying to follow this. I've been actually following AIG, and it's been a few weeks since I mentioned, this was right on the heels of the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme disclosures that...
excuse me, but Bernie's got a new buddy now, Don. Did you know that?
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember who that is.
Arthur G. Nadell.
That's right.
Go ahead. Finish the thought, and I'll jump in on him. But go ahead.
Yeah. I know that those payments, or shall we call them transactions, took place in the London office of AIG. And here you have all these people saying that they don't know anything about it. Paulson, George W. Bush, and likely George H.W. Bush, Ben Bernanke, and Geithner all were involved in this $12.9 billion payout to Goldman Sachs. Now, I haven't heard much about that, but this is coming from various camps around the world. And if that is true, then again, we have another scandal connected to the city of London, and this mirrors the trillions of dollars that were stolen from Iraq, found in 7,000 safety deposit boxes, somewhere in the, let's say, the latter half of 2008.
You're not talking about the pallet loads, the $18 billion they dumped over there, are you?
No, I'm talking about let's say, in the neighborhood of $100 trillion of money that was stolen from Iraq, along with art and jewels and other precious artifacts that were stolen from the bank in Baghdad, as well as all the art that they pilfered from wherever, from palaces or whatever. And they had 7,000 safety deposit boxes in three mailbox-type places. You know, something like mailboxes, etc. I'm not saying that that's the name of the company. They're going to come at
they have their own person in Iraq. Go ahead.
Well, no, this is in London that this occurred.
Oh, okay.
And then they had three gigantic vault rooms filled with the larger items that couldn't fit in these boxes. This took place, it seems to me, like it was somewhere around June or July, somewhere around that time, when they nailed them. They sent 300 police officers to surround these three facilities, and they went in and confiscated all the boxes. They took them all out. They didn't just open them up and remove the innards. Now, I don't know about the room size vaults. I presume that all of that stuff was boxed up or put into vaults that were a little bit more portable. But that was just one incident. And then we've had a few incidents where George W. Bush was visiting Gordon Brown in London. Gordon Brown gave him a big send-off, and then he hopped on a plane and met them at the tarmac of, I think it was the Dublin airport. It was in Ireland. When Bush arrived there with Laura Bush, Gordon Brown was waiting for him at the airport. and they opened up a bank account together. So there was more money laundering going on there. This was, to some extent, I think, being orchestrated by French President Sarkozy, who happens to be more Hungarian than French, and they had charged Sarkozy through the EU with the responsibility of monitoring the Wantagate payouts. So this was billions of dollars that had to exchange hands, and these guys were still pilfering money. Unbelievable. We've also had $14 trillion that was sitting at Citibank ended up going to Dubai a little over a month and a half ago, say maybe almost 2 months ago. That money was stolen. Greenspan and George H.W. Bush were behind that. Word was that they were both arrested. Greenspan was arrested and probably tagged with some kind of an ankle bracelet with a tracking device on it. It's getting really crazy. Then you hear about Hillary Clinton going over to China and basically giving China eminent domain over the real estate here.
Well, yeah, but Don, have you confirmed that? Now,
No, I don't buy that. I think that's just a psyop.
But I'll tell you, I think the main reason, in all honesty, the main reason she went over there, and again, I haven't been able to confirm that story, but she went over there to beg China to buy treasury bonds, and I believe that China basically told her where to stick it, because the Fed just, I think just last Tuesday, they bought $300 billion of treasury bonds from the U.S. government. So that tells me that Hillary Clinton's trip over there was in vain, but you can't blame the Chinese.
No.
Matter of fact, the Chinese have come out, I think, yesterday or today, and they're calling for a world currency, but this is part of the grand scheme of it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're pushing for here.
Yeah.
But they want to loot the economy first and totally drag, you know, the American citizen down with them.
Yeah. You know, Michael, what's becoming increasingly clear to me is that all of this is being orchestrated by the British and the Israelis. In fact, we have what you could call British communism or British Israelism. On the left, you've got the political faction. On the right, you've got the so-called conservative Christian faction. And yet, what all the ministers in the huge churches around the country, the John Hagees and Rod Parsleys and these guys, and on, think of any big TV evangelist, and they're part of this movement, telling us that we have to help poor little Israel. You've got that everywhere. You've got the Zionists controlling the media, and they've all been coached by the British. You've got like Rupert Murdoch, aka Rupert Greenberg, and he was trained and schooled in the United Kingdom. He's the richest man in Australia, and Australia is a former British colony. Everywhere you look, there's a connection to the British and the Israelis. And it is British Israelism. And they're pitting the Christians who are fighting against communism. They've swallowed this trap, basically, or this bait, which is, you know, poor little Israel. You know, we have to save Israel from destruction, and poor little Israel is fighting for its very existence. It's got this evil menace, which is the Muslim community, which is another farce, and that's a creation of the British as well. That's a creation of British intelligence. And it's, they've used the American military for years to be the international policeman and drag us in. They did this in World War II. It was after World War II in promise for getting us involved in the war. Britain saw to it that Israel could take over Palestine, and that's
what
they
did. Well, that was the Balfour Declaration. That was World War One, Don.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying it wasn't until 1948 that Israel actually became a country.
Right. That's yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so this plot has been carried out with these two for quite a long time. And really, you have to take into consideration all the secret societies. They're all working hand in hand with each other. You have people that research the Vatican that say, well, it's the Vatican, or people that research the Jesuits saying, it's the Jesuits. It's all organized crime, and it's spiritual warfare, because when you get someone to give in to this ruse on a spiritual side or on a religious side, it becomes spiritual warfare. They're literally giving their spiritual permission. And this is why you have all these conflicting stories going on in the Christian community. And this is why the Patriots are not getting anywhere, because they've fallen for this trap too. I'm seeing it very, very clearly. I've been looking at it country by country, war by war. And you can see this even with China. China has been controlled by Britain for 100 years. Even though they're a huge country, they have the largest population on Earth, and they now have control of most of the manufacturing and most of the wholesale outlets, and are even controlling the retail outlets over here in the States. It's no accident that they got to be where they are, because that is one of the communist enemies, the other being Russia. Well, how do they infiltrate us with Russia? They literally brought their organized crime element here. So this is really what's going on. And the British stay behind the scenes. Everybody says, well, the British Empire is no more. It's not this great navy that it was. Mm-hmm. Tell me why we're practicing maritime law or admiralty law. Why do we have an administrative law in Washington, D.C.? Why are we following the British model? Why does Canada have a parliament? So, you know, in a very general sense, that's how I see the whole picture coming together. And England is controlling the minds of people through Tavistock. That's no accident. Tavistock trained Hitler. They trained Stalin. And they basically orchestrated everything that went on in two world wars through mind control. And they not only mind controlled the actual people that led these antagonistic sides, say like Hitler, for example. Many of Hitler's men were trained by the British. And whether they were conscious of it or unconscious, it really doesn't matter. It all follows the same pattern. You can see Britain's role in 9/11 by the BBC broadcasting the destruction of World Trade Center building number 7 24 minutes before it actually went down. You can see their knowledge, their foreknowledge of it. There were accomplices in it, and they screwed up, and it was evident to anybody really paying attention. Anyway, that's what
well,
I
that's
see.
That's good. Happens. That was a nice rant there, Don. I felt like a listener instead of a guest. See, that was
okay.
Eight minutes worth. Well, you know, I learned something interesting today, and believe it or not, with all the research I've done, do you know what Larry Silverstein and late FBI agent John O'Neill have in common?
Is this a joke?
No, John O'Neill. You know, John O'Neill's the FBI agent that was killed in the World Trade Center when it came down. But did you know that Larry Silverstein hired John O'Neill?
That's what they had in common.
Well, yeah,
well, one was the boss,
they had
and
an
the other
employer-employee relationship. How's that?
Okay, I see. I'm just pulling your leg.
Okay. No, but anyway, John O'Neill was investigating. Oh, he had been with the FBI for 20 years, and he was investigating the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. And he started getting on to Israel's involvement in many terror operations. And so, ultimately, Barbara Bodine, ambassador to Yemen, John O'Neill went to Yemen, and she started taking a look at him and got very, very suspicious of him. She wanted to control the investigation, and he had brought, I guess, hundreds of FBI agents over to that country. And Madeleine Albright provided a handful of State Department personnel in Yemen to watch the investigation. So anyway, Albright and Bodine panicked because O'Neill was investigating, and he was finding out that all these bombings were pointing to Israel. So Bodine asked O'Neill to drop his bodyguards, and so he became suspicious of a Mossad assassination. And Bodine and Albright went to the Zionist Jewish FBI director, Louis Freeh, to remove him, John O'Neill, from Yemen. And so in January of 2001, O'Neill wanted to go back, but Bodine wouldn't give him the clearance. And so in July of 2001, O'Neill resigned from the FBI, and then Larry Silverstein turned around and offered him a job. What a coincidence, huh? And Larry Silverstein just today, or well, not today, but just a few days ago, now he's got his hand out to the government wanting part of the bailout money to help finance the rebuilding of the World Trade Center towers. But my suspicions are that all these people are tied together. Ehud Olmert, who's been indicted for bribery, you know, he was trying to he was trying to get Frank Lloyd to run the Leumi Bank.
That's Silverstein's partner in the World Trade Center, too.
That's right. Yeah. That's right, and they're buddies with Ehud Olmert and Benjamin Netanyahu. But Ehud Olmert was trying to get Frank Lloyd to run the bank, and they wound up not allowing him to do that. But I do believe that, and I'm still researching this, but I believe that there's a strong connection between the Bernie Madoff scandal. I believe that all of these guys, Ehud Olmert, Silverstein, Lloyd, Benjamin Netanyahu, a number of the high-level players in the administration, the Bush administration, and the Obama administration, I believe that this is all tied together, and it also ties in with this guy, the new owner of Huffman Aviation, this Art Nadell, because you know they're calling him now Mini Madoff because he ripped off better than $300 million from. Hedge fund, or excuse me, some senior citizens down in Sarasota, Florida. But what's interesting about Nadell is that he was a prominent player in Sarasota, Florida's Jewish, I emphasize Jewish, social and philanthropic circles. So all of these people, they all have these Jewish ties. Now, this isn't an anti-Semitic statement. This is just a fact.
Yeah.
That this is a Zionist connection. All these people are players. They make it into these high positions in government, and they turn around through their nefarious activities, banking and otherwise. And I'm talking about Geithner, all these guys that were in the banks, Henry Paulson, all these players. Okay.
Don't forget Robert Rubin too.
The bottom line is to exact and to steal as much money from the American people as they can.
Mm-hmm.
I was fascinated as I keep connecting the dots. There's more and more stuff that continues to come out about this, and it's almost a revolving door. It goes back way prior to 9/11. It goes back to the World Trade Center bombings and who's involved in this. And you know, connecting all the dots that I have, there's no question in my mind that all of these events are false flag events. And I'm talking about Oklahoma City. I'm talking about 1993. I'm talking about the USS Cole. It was all orchestrated by the Israeli Mossad, and John O'Neill knew it, and that's why they took him out.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you there. And I would say the British are just as involved in it, too. You know, they're suspiciously quiet while all this is going on. In fact, the London bombings were just to throw people off, to make it look like they were being attacked by terrorists as well. The same thing that went on here. Now, they hit Spain, they hit Madrid, because Madrid didn't want anything more to do with the wars going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. That's the reason why they were picked out. The Bali bombing, the nightclub bombing, I don't know about that. That could have been something personal, and it probably had something to do with Barack Obama, to tell you the truth. Let me say this. One of the other things that's coming out, too, and this is courtesy of David Hawkins and Field McConnell, who have been on the show a couple of times and going to be on later this week. They've been doing the forensic research of the financials of a lot of things, and they keep pointing to Siddeley Austin, Cisco Systems, and Mindbox Technology. This is basically a Tontine insurance scam to take out people who are in an investment or in an insurance pool. They put them on a plane, they crash the plane, they collect a bunch of money. In the case of Beverly Eckert and Allison DeForge, who was the Rwanda researcher, Beverly Eckert being the wife of a 9/11 victim, and very outspoken about that, and Guantanamo, within a week after having visited Obama at the White House, they took out the plane in Buffalo. And David Hawkins and Field McConnell have been tracking not only that plane crash, but 9/11 and some other plane crashes that have occurred around the world. We just had another one last night, by the way. Can't remember if it's in Montana or South Dakota, someplace like that.
Is that the one that killed 7 school children?
Yeah. It was a plane that was coming up from Southern California, made several stops on the way up, made it all the way up to the airport, 500 feet from the runway, taken out. It smacks of the same kind of...
What are they reporting was the reason for the crash?
Well, I haven't heard anything more about that particular crash, but I can tell you where they said ICE was at fault in Buffalo. We know that Siddeley Austin is involved in this. They, under the direction of, guess who? Michelle LaVon Robinson, who became Michelle Obama, trained all the people that do these scams. She trained everybody for Siddeley Austin. And this is just another element of organized crime where they're cleaning up on money. Now, I asked them if they thought they did this on 9/11, and they said absolutely, that they carry secret insurance policies on many of the people in these corporations. These people don't even know they're insured. And they can get your name off of a list of flights that they tabulate. And when they have you on one of their planes, and these are fractionally owned planes, say made in by Bombardier, given to Colgan, who sublets it out or co-owns it with a company like, say, Continental, which was the case of the plane in that crashed in Buffalo. They claim it's ICE. They have phony, they actually had Mossad agents. I tracked these people down. They all come from the same towns. They don't live where they said they live in the media. They were all set up to be witnesses on the scene to say, yeah, the plane had ICE on it. Who can see that 10:30 at night or 10:20 at night? Actually, the actual crash time was 10:17, according to several witnesses, and we found 7 witnesses, including an ex-police officer who's an emergency medical technician, still, who took film and interviewed people, and 7 people he talked to said that the plane was on fire when it came down. So we know that what they're telling us and what we're able to find is 2 different stories. Now, Michael, we got a call here. Would you like to take a call?
Sure.
We got Leo, my good buddy from Massachusetts, on. Leo, welcome. Do you got a question or a comment for Michael Herzog?
Oh, Michael Herzog, yeah. I was thinking in terms of the whole Zionist-Jesuit connection, that World War II was financed by the Zionist banks, and the Jesuits played a pretty strong role in it. And now I talked to Dr. Lorraine Day the other day, and she was trying to say that Ignatius Loyola was actually Jewish. And this is kind of interesting. And I've been trying to figure out that, you know, how many donkeys do we have to pin the tail on? Because it seems like everybody's trying to pin the tail on one donkey, but there's really a bunch of donkeys working together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Michael, you want to comment on that?
Hey, you're getting a feedback there. I'm getting a strong feedback.
Yeah, we got a little bit of digital delay. I think
okay.
Seth will take care of it.
a bunch of donkeys working together. Every time I go down a rabbit hole, Leo, on any of this stuff, you know, and primarily it was on 9/11. I'm looking at the Bernie Madoff scandal. I'm looking at the stimulus package, the bailout, and so forth. And I always it always seems the trail the money trail seems to lead back to Israel. Now, if that is just you know a sub portion of something higher up, well, so be it. Okay, but I can tell you this: that every time I do any research whatsoever on any of it, it always goes back, at least in my research, to the same place. When you say how many tails to pin on the donkey, you know, what are your views?
Well, I think that going back to World War II is my best analogy. It seems that Hitler was double-crossed after Dunkirk. I mean, I think Dunkirk happened because they probably said, no more money if you catch our guys there. So they pretended to stop them from escaping. But that's a pretty, you know, a blatant thing. That Dunkirk is a real eye-opener once you start looking at it and seeing what it really was. And so the whole World War II was a total fraud. I mean, World War I is harder to prove, with the exception that, you know, if you're building something and you want the last key item in place, I usually ask people, well, what happened in 1913? Of course, a lot of people don't even know what happened in 1913.
Well, Leo, if I can add something, you made a comment about the Jesuits in World War II. In my genealogical research of the Bush-Walker clan, and I mentioned the Walkers because I looked at both sides of the family, and I noticed in George Herbert Walker, who's the father-in-law of Prescott Bush, in his biography, they bragged about him having gone to Stonyhurst, and that is the headquarters of the Jesu Society, which is the Jesuits. And the Jesuits are controlling the Vatican through the Black Pope.
Right. Well, they don't need you anymore now that they have the rat.
Yeah. Well, I found also in my research that George Herbert Walker was instrumental in putting together the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis. Now, the Walkers lied about their age. They lied about where they were from, as the Bushes did. I mean, just flat out. How can you not know where your parents were born? And these are the types of lies that they told the government. So you know that that none of it was true. They were making it up, and they just told whatever lie was convenient at the time. You know, they start out by saying both of their parents, this is Walker saying this, both of his parents were born in Missouri. Then the second time, 10 years later, he says his father was born in Missouri, and his mother was born in Maryland. Then the next time, both parents are born in Maryland. Then it's back to Missouri again on the fourth census. Yet their biography says the father was born near a farm in Bloomington, Illinois. Now, you know, it's lie after lie after lie, and no one ever called these people on this, okay? But the one thing I could substantiate is he had a Jesuit connection as far back as 1904, and likely before that, because he went to school there in Stonyhurst. And Stonyhurst actually moved four times before, I should say the Jesu Society moved four times before they settled in Stonyhurst, where they are today. And they have.
Well, okay, can I interject something here? Because Leo was speaking for a moment about, you know, pinning the tails on the donkeys and so forth. And, you know, and this is my view. I could be wrong, Leo, but I look at who owns who runs the Federal Reserve, the World Bank. I look at who is in control of 97% of all the media all over the world, okay? And it all goes back to the same people. And I'm not talking about Jewish as a religion. I'm talking about Zionism as ideology.
Right.
Right. So, you know, if there's Jesuit involvement in it, I haven't been able to find it. Wait a minute.
Yeah,
well, you're not familiar with
it.
The Jesuits' actions in World War II?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
You're not familiar with the Jesuit actions in World War II?
No, I have never researched that, Leo. No, I
haven't. Oh, it's just incredible. Read the Jesuit oath of induction, the extreme oath of induction. Reformation.org has a lot of good historical material. Are you familiar with Reformation.org?
No, but I think I've read that, what is that, that Jesuit oath that you're talking about?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've read that.
I mean, that's truly grotesque.
While. Yeah, we discussed that on my show this past week, and even this weekend we talked about this on a couple of shows that I did on some other networks. One here on BBS, actually. I was on with Dr. Christopher Holmes. We were talking about this. Basically, it's do as thou wilt, okay? That they do anything. They'll murder, they'll steal, they'll plunder, they'll rape, they'll turn family members against each other to get at whatever it is they want. And the Jesuits primarily control what goes on in New York and Washington, D.C., or let's say on the East Coast, through four major universities. Fordham is the one that was, let's say, the watchdog of St. Patrick's Cathedral in the days of Francis Cardinal Spellman, who was a personal friend of J. Edgar Hoover, was on the MJ-12 committee and very influential in a lot of politics.
Well, let me ask you this. If the now you just said the Jesuits control Washington D.C. Is that correct? Did I hear you right?
Well, they're controlling a lot of the politicians and a lot of the dictates of the intelligence agencies.
Well, if that's the case, then why is the offices, the appointments in Washington D.C. and I'm talking about in the administration, why is it rife with Zionists, dual citizenship Israelis?
Well, when you say Jesuits, that doesn't exclude them from being Zionists or working with the Zionists. You see, they hide behind this. I'm remember what I said earlier when I did my 8 or 9 minute rant? I was saying that there's this British element behind the scenes. You see, the Jesuits are in England. And where do they get this money? You have Fordham, you have Georgetown, you have Boston College.
Oh yeah,
is also a Jesuit school. Okay, and much of what goes on, you think it's by chance that they're claiming Barack Obama went to Harvard, although I doubt he went there. I doubt he went to Columbia University. I doubt he went to Occidental, but those are just three of the Jesuit schools.
Are you both saying that the Jesuits, you're saying the Jesuits control Washington, D.C., but are you saying that they control Israel as well?
Well, you can read Barry Chamish.
Oh, there's a connection there, too, yeah.
Wait a minute. What was that about Barry Chamish? What about him?
Chamish is a Zionist, but he's deathly afraid of who's really running Israel. He had to leave Israel. Read Barry Chamish, The Sabbatean Holocaust, and a few other.
Oh, this is Leo. This is getting very interesting because I'm going to have Barry Chamish on my show Thursday.
Good. Where are you on?
And I LibertyNewsRadio.com.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You're not allowed to mention other networks on this show. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. but matter of fact, I've mentioned it on my show. I'm certain that Barry's views of Israel and my views of Israel are two different things. But I'm trying to find out from both of you guys here, with the amount of dual citizens that are in the administration right now, and it seems to be a revolving door. It doesn't matter what administration. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Israel controls this federal government. All right. Now that's. And you're telling me if the Jesuits control this administration, then that means that they would control Israel, and I would have a problem with that
Go ahead. I'm not saying necessarily this administration. I'm saying many administrations. They were a behind-the-scenes political tool that played a major role in many, many decisions. And this goes back, decades, okay? Not quite 100 years, but I can tell you, Francis Cardinal Spellman, who was also gay, known as Franny on Broadway in New York because he was dating a 24-year-old chorus boy who used to pick up every night in his limousine and hang out with him, you know. There's a lot. If you do the research on Spellman and you do the research on MJ-12, you'll see his name come up.
Now, okay, Leo, you mentioned that Barry Chamish had to leave Israel?
Yes, ask him about that, because he knows who's really controlling Israel, and it seems that, are you familiar with Henry Kissinger being an envoy from the Vatican, not to the Vatican?
Yes, I've heard that.
And so that the whole New World Order is not just Jewish, it's a little bit bigger than that, and... You know,
I'm not saying Jewish. I am saying Zionist.
Yeah, Zionist. Okay? I know what you mean, Zionist. But anyway, right. I want to put out a couple of ideas I had just recently. One I just got today. But the other day I was thinking, I was on Jack McClan's program, and I got the brilliant yippie-type idea for a demonstration. We have all these Ron Paul supporters dress up as gays, and we'll go down. They're trying to push a hate crimes bill through Congress right now. So we should dress up as gays and go down there and say, ban the Bible. The Bible is hate speech.
Why don't you just have somebody make you some Barney Frank masks?
Yeah, well, that's... Have you seen the skit from Saturday Night Live about the bailout? It's a scream.
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, I'm going to have to send that to you. It's really good. But anyway, so that was one idea. But the other idea I had today was... When they're really afraid, it seems like Alex and them are really afraid of the, Alan Watt was on too, and they're really afraid of the, and I couldn't get it out at that time, because Alex went off on a tangent, but they're worried about the whole thing coming down with the Obama Stasi force, and I figured out the perfect way to wipe them out ahead of time. And that would be to have a really nice scroll parchment type thing that you could sign. And you could say, I believe that Obama is my Führer, and I'm willing to give up all of my rights from the Constitution and be a good German. And so when they come to your door, you can say, oh, I already signed my pledge. Here's my pledge. And when the straight ones who don't realize they're being given the screw job will look at this, they'll be horrified and quit, and then the only ones left will be the total jerks, and there won't be that many of them.
You see, Leo, what are you smoking tonight? I think it's cute, but I don't think it'll work, to tell
Why?
You the truth.
Why? Get enough people with a sense of humor. You can destroy these people. I mean, you don't realize how humor can destroy people. I mean, I've used humor as the most... a sharply pointed bullet that I've ever could have, and it works wonders. I mean, just think, could you imagine an Obama supporter coming to your door, and then you show them this plaque that says, oh, I'm already an Obama fascist who's given up my constitutional rights and I'm hoping to become like a good German. I mean, could that say it in any more of a nutshell?
I think what you should do is you should have 10,000 bumper stickers made up with Obama's picture on it, and drive to Missouri. That's what I think you should do.
Well, I think this is... See, because I think that when these people start coming out in force to be this little Stasi team that he wants, we should shock the good ones to quit. And I think that would... Say something like that to them. The good ones who are naive will look at this and say, oh, my God, you know... Is this what I'm
well,
doing?
Well, Leo, the way I see this, all of this stuff is just smoke screens to hide or to divert your attention from what's really going on. They're pilfering trillions of dollars every day.
You know, I think we have to look at money in a little different way. What is money? Is it gold? Is it my willingness to perform a service for somebody else? I mean... How are we going to define money?
Well, how are they assessing money to us as a debt through this bailout? How is it that the first one amounts to, what, $30,000 a person? Okay, did you agree to give them $30,000 to to reward criminals for stealing trillions of dollars? That's literally what the issue is.
Yeah, I know, but I'm looking for ways to make them irrelevant.
Well,
I'm looking for a profound methodology, sort of like the greening of America type of thing, where we as individuals can pick this greenish path and put them in the dustbin of history. And I'm trying to my ideas run to this. Have 10 do's and 10 don'ts, but have them geared so that people in the city can have their specifics, people in the suburbs can have their specifics, and people in the country can have their specifics. And then also break it down along economic demographic lines. Now, what this could do, and if you had people like Gerald Celente and Bob Chapman and Greg Evanson and Officer McClam, I mean, I think, and even Colonel Roberts, I think he's really good, too, get a whole bunch of people to sign out to it. You know how the left movement works. You have this coalition of every single little potty little organization. You have all these zillion organizations lining up with this, and it creates a big organization because everybody wants to come and, you know, show themselves forward. But I mean, what I'm trying to say is the more the merrier. That's all.
Well, we have to join forces, that's for sure. But we all have to be on the same page. Michael, you want to comment on that?
Well, I was, you know, when he was saying that, getting all these people together, you know, Russell Means comes to mind up there in South Dakota because he's inviting people to come up there and live as free people. And the complaint that he has is all these people are coming up there to live as free people, but when they realize there's so much responsibility that goes along with it, they turn around and go home. You know? So, and what you said about the division, we all have to come together here, but the problem is that, you know, everybody's got their agendas. You know, you've got so many different issues going on out there. If we could put all these people together from the, you know, the chemtrails and the the tax movement and the anti-war movement and so forth, you get them all together, and you've got enough people to take this country back. The problem is getting them all together and getting them of like mind, because, you know, I can go into a group with 5 or 10 people and I can see it fractionalized. And another thing that's happening, Don, and I've noticed this of late, even these smaller groups that are happening with, you know, for example, the chemtrails or the 9/11 movements, they're being fractionalized by infiltrators that are going in there and disrupting their meetings. Just by being, you know, they're being paid to be obnoxious and to just drive people crazy, you know. So this is what we're up against. So I think it's a great idea. How we're going to do it's another, you know, another question in itself.
Yeah, you got to start on a local level. You know.
Well, I'm saying even on the local level. I went to a meeting just a couple of weeks ago. Actually, it was Sophia was putting on a meeting for chemtrails, and there was a lady in there that absolutely disrupted. She was obnoxious as heck, and she drove everybody nuts, but she was running around shoving a list in front of everybody, including myself, to get them to sign on it. And of course her spiel was that she was going to call us all the next day. We've never heard from her again, so there's no question in my mind that this lady was a paid infiltrator. And this is happening not only, you know, I mean, it's happening all over the place in the smaller meetup groups. Now, the feds are actually paying people to go in there and disrupt these groups. Go ahead.
I mean, isn't that kind of like a given that you only get flack when you're over the target?
Well, of course.
Well, yeah. I mean, it shows you're doing the right thing.
Sure. All I'm saying here is that look at you know, we're bringing all these people together, but what we're talking about is the, you know, what we're up against in doing so. Myself, if I went back to another meeting like that and that particular woman showed up with her entourage, I would leave. That's how badly she drove me nuts. And there was several other complaints about it too, but I'm not talking about an isolated incident. I'm talking about in a number of these events that are going on a local level. This is happening now.
Yeah, well, chemtrails are being sprayed all over the globe. If you're going to start on a local level and you try to nationalize the movement from the get-go, it's not going to go anywhere. You've got to start locally in your area. Just, you know, when you have a barbecue, do you go online and invite everybody you know across the country to your barbecue? Of course not.
No, Don, but what I'm speaking about is I'm talking about local events here in Phoenix, in San Diego, up in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
They get wind of these events and they go in and try to disrupt them. I'm just saying that that's what is happening here that I'm noticing. I've had a number of reports on that now.
So throw them out. Throw them out of the meeting.
Well,
you know,
it's easier said than done. Okay, because they are. I don't want to say they're covert, but I mean, you can only judge them by their actions, and you can't prove that that they are a paid informant or whatever. You can only watch them and notice by their actions that there's something very strange about what they're doing, in this case, the one I was at a couple of weeks ago, this lady was obtaining all the information for all of the people that were there. And obviously, by her lack of follow-up action, that shows me that that list that she had everybody sign was going someplace other than on her her dresser at home.
Well, yeah, just hindsight, I think, if you're having a meeting, you're creating the list. The person who's putting this whole thing together, the sponsor, would create any list. But this is not something for someone to bring in from the outside. That's contrary to the.
Well, this particular woman went in under the guise of wanting to contact everybody in there because she had something else that she knew everybody would be interested in, and she was pushing an agenda. But she was very obnoxious, very forceful, shoving this this tablet in front of everybody's face. Frankly, I signed it just to get rid of her, get her out of my face. So, but I'm saying that this has now happened here in Phoenix. It's happened in San Diego. It's happened in Portland. These are the reports I'm getting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I mean, I would just say, no, thank you. I'm not interested in signing. Let her be a pest. Keep bothering me. Throw her out. What else do you do?
I can't throw her out if it's not my meeting.
Yeah.
Okay, and it wasn't my meeting, so... Leo, did you have something else?
Don?
Yeah.
I had another interesting question. Now, remember all those big tunneling machines they had, and they're supposedly having this tunnel network?
Yeah, it's actually not right on topic, but are you somehow going to tie this in?
Well, the only thing I've figured out why we don't see any of these tunnels coming out, because I'm betting that the tunnels go from internment camp to internment camp. And that's why there's no places where they come out.
Well, they can go in, they can actually go to a hotel in Las Vegas, or they can go to a building in Washington, D.C., or in New York.
Right, right, right.
Lots of places there are multiple entries.
How do we get someone inside to crack on it, though? That's what I'm interested in.
Well, I would nominate you, Leo. Go look. Start looking. Get a good dowser, Go get one of these farmers that's got himself a little Y stick, a guy that can douse for water. If he can douse for water, he can find the tunnels.
I heard that guy today on Dr. K about the fellow who was taking the photographs, and he said some really incredible stuff, like there wasn't any clear path, like it dropped straight down, which really is like quite different than what you would normally expect in icing. I mean, I'm a bit of an aviation buff, and icing is a degenerative process. You lose your altitude slowly. And your indicator would tell you that it's time to turn the de-icers on.
That plane fell straight down on top of the house. It didn't skid over the house.
Right.
Okay. It actually took down two houses.
And he's saying how they carted away all the some buildings that weren't even hit and cleared the whole place. So there must have been some dirt inside the plane they didn't want known. You see, like with 9/11, the thermite's all over the place. They can't hide it.
Yeah, there was a pool of molten metal at the bottom of a pit when it hit that house. Similar to...
Wait a minute, in Buffalo?
Yes.
You're kidding.
No. Stephen Wallace was the gentleman you're talking about who was
right,
Dr.
Right,
Case.
Right. I don't remember hearing the molten metal bit, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, in fact, I was the one that referred Stephen Wallace to Dr. K because I had found his video and his contact information, and I urged him to speak with him.
Did you get him to go on Alex Jones?
No, Dr. K.
No, could you get Stephen Wallace to go?
Well, why?
Alex is big.
This isn't about Alex Jones.
I know, this is a different show. It's about Stephen Wallace, too.
Well, yeah, but Stephen Wallace and Dr. K were interested in bringing out all the facts. Let's just put it that way.
Alex did change something because I asked him. I told him to get a translator, and now he has a translator at the bottom of each page. 35 languages, too. That's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, I guess if you're going to fearmonger, you want to do it in every language.
Leo,
we got to move on here, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for your call.
Okay.
All right. Well, Michael.
Well, that just took up the show.
Yeah, it did. It's okay. Leo's a good guy. Leo's thinking on his feet. And that's Leo. What can I say?
Well, where do we go from here?
Well, a few good points came up here. What were we talking about when Leo called? Let's see.
Let's go back to square one. You guys both brought up this Jesuit connection, and you're talking about coming out of London, you know, and what I'm saying is that everything that I've researched, every false flag terror event that I've looked into, it always, and I'm talking about everyone, I'm talking about, the London bombings, I'm talking about the World Trade Center 93, I'm talking about the USS Cole, they all go back to Israel.
They do, but you cannot exclude Great Britain. You cannot exclude the British Israelism that's here. This is an underlying sort of behind the scenes intentional obfuscation. Okay? You can connect.
But my question to you, Don, is are you saying that this Jesuit infiltration or connection or whatever it is controlling the neocon Zionist agenda?
They're playing a major role. You can't say at any one of these secret societies is by itself controlling the others. But they are a major player. And you would say, you ask the question, why Britain? Well, Britain's origins, as far as who is sitting on the throne, goes to Germany, to Saxe Gotha, or Saxe Coburg and Gotha. That goes back to several hundred years ago. And we had the Battenberg name from the Frankfurt area changed to Mount Batten, and they changed the name of the royal house to the House of Windsor. And that was eventually done by George V. But this goes back hundreds of years. Those people are of Germanic descent, Ashkenazis. They were part of the Satanist movement that goes back to Adam Weishaupt.
Right, the Ashkenazi, the Khazars, right?
Yes.
Right, and that's what I'm talking about here. It goes back to the 7th century with King Bulan.
That's correct.
Right? And that's the people that I'm speaking about. I'm not speaking about Jewish people. The Bible even stipulates in Revelations 2:9-3:9, beware of those who say they are Jews but are not.
Well, the people running Israel are not Jews either.
I know that, and that's what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Okay. But I'm having a little bit of difficulty trying to tie in this Jesuit control mechanism with these, Ashkenazis. All right. So I guess maybe I have to do a little bit more digging on this, but what it looks like this brings up shades of Greg Zizmansky and Vatican Assassins or Eric John Phelps or whatever.
To an extent. Now, is that 100%? Because Phelps's argument is that it's solely the Jesuits controlling it, and I mm-hmm. disagree.
Well, I do too.
Yeah.
Because to me, that entire entourage is nothing more than a diversion. to get people off of the real issue.
Yeah.
You know, and I start looking at, you know, who is permeated through with their tentacles in this government and the intelligence community, and it's got, you know, Zionist Israel painted all over it. Now, I guess what you're saying is, and what Leo had mentioned, is that the Jesuits are either, you know, complicit in it or they're pulling the strings. I don't know that I buy that, all right? Now, I'm not saying who's right or who's wrong here. Okay, but I don't know that I buy that issue.
I'm not asking to buy it. It's not for sale.
Okay.
I wouldn't know what to charge.
And I'm the first to admit that I haven't gone down the journalistic rabbit hole on the Jesuits per se. As Leo mentioned, I had read that document that he was talking about. I've read the Protocols of Zion as well. You know, so mm-hmm. What are these same members of the Jesuits and the Zionists are members of the secret society, and they're all working hand in hand with each other?
They're all working hand in hand. You see, Walker was the one that facilitated the Union Banking Corporation. He stayed out of the picture. That was the Jesuit influence, and it was run by Ashkenazis, okay? You had the Warburgs come in there and get involved with Kuhn and Loeb. The fortuitous marriage of Prescott and Dorothy Sheldon, Prescott Bush and Dorothy Sheldon, making George Herbert Walker the father-in-law of Prescott Bush, and he gave him an honorary position as a director of the Union Banking Corporation, and got him into politics and all of that. You know, that connection's there. You can't deny that. There's a guy trained by the Jesuits. Okay?
Okay.
So,
okay. All right. I mean, I could go along with, I suppose, to a degree that there's a Jesuit influence and they're working hand in hand. But as far as controlling them, with the players that I see in the game that are controlling the banking industry as a whole and the intelligence community and so forth, it is rife with Zionists.
Sure. And come in all colors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We got another...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we got another call. We got Ron from Pennsylvania, I think it is. I just have Ron up here on the board, so I'm presuming it's Ron from Pennsylvania. Ron, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Oh, thank you. You presume correctly.
All right. You have a comment or a question for Michael Herzog.
Pardon me?
Do you have a comment or question for Michael Herzog?
There's two. One yesterday I heard mentioned from a fellow by the name of Gordon Thomas, who wrote a book, I think, on the MI5 and MI6. He was on a program mentioning around 2 a.m. this morning, I think it was, that he had gotten word about a tentatively but unable to defend against attack during the G20 summit times over there in London. They suspect, and he got a call, that this is going to take place. They have no idea what and when, and they can't defend against it because London is so wide of an open city that there's actually every riffraff and his brother and cousin there. They don't know what to look for. And I guess if you're going to whack London, that would be the time to do it. But it seems a lot of these attacks in the world certainly are based on the dollar sign, which is certainly a poor reason to do anything. But Leo's mention on the tie-in between the Jesuits and the Ashkenazis, the Zionists. See, Zionism only came to be around the 1900s, late 1800s, as an organized political movement in name. But it was always practiced for centuries and centuries and centuries earlier. But the Ashkenazis were kicked out of every place they went in, and the migratory routes can be seen in a document, a film called The Eternal Jew, around 1933.
I'm familiar with that. I believe they've been kicked out of 78 countries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've gotten a lot more than I have. But anyway, the tie-in, I'm just going through a book, and I've got to spend time to document and really outline and read this thing. It's over 1,000 pages on Judaism Discovered. And on page 253, it shows a picture of an amulet. It's a Kabbalistic amulet from the Arithmologia of Jesuit Father Anastasius Kircher from Rome, Varisian Rome, 1665. So the amulets and the Kabbalah was used by some of these nutcases to go ahead and conjure up demons and practice the black arts. Now, the Jesuit priest, at least this one, did have involvement, because I got a picture of the amulet here. So how well they worked in league or hand-in-hand with one another or believe each other's baloney is unknown to me, but there always was a tie-in ever since that. I've heard that before. Now, to say that the Jesuits are running Washington, D.C., I'm really not so sure on that. But they got too many Zionists out there. I'd like to see have a mass exodus back to the old country and stay there.
I didn't say they're running it. I said they're highly influential.
Yeah, they are.
In running it.
This suggests
they are in South America, too. Very few people are aware of that. And wow. And this is by proxy through their control, their covert black control, along with Opus Dei from Spain. Those two organizations are highly influential in what goes on at the Vatican.
You know what's
and I'm speaking about this in a satanic sense.
Oh, yeah.
Not in a traditional Catholic sense.
Oh, yeah. Now, I know not far from here, I think it's toward Greensburg, there is a Catholic priest I've talked to, both of them, two or three of them, come up with different answers. There is actually a basilica about 30 miles away from me, 40 miles away. And there's only 7 basilicas in the world. Now, the priest will tell you there's more. That's not true. Now, this is like a 10-story underground city that is no longer on public tour. Public used to be able to go in there, but they closed that. Now, every basilica has to have a relic somewhere on grounds in order to be classified as a relic, and then there's the Pope sanction, and there's some other things involved with that. But like some of the catacombs over in the Rome, now in Rome, St. Peter's is a basilica, and they have catacombs and levels, just like this one about 40 miles away from me does. And I wonder what kind of antiquity is locked up in those things. The actual, true, real knowledge of the world is in, all 7 basilicas. It must be fascinating if somebody would ever get in there and look at it. But one thing surprises me with all of this going on so far, with all the multi-trillions of dollars that's stolen, people committing suicide, getting all distraught over losing everything, and the future of where this is going. There has been 3 20-year periods in history, I have a map of it, but I don't have it on the screen now, where the stock market crashed, one in the 1800s and the one later around the 80s, took a long time to even recover, and there have been plots in up and down mathematical zigzag charts where you can actually see these pockets of depression. I'd like to coordinate that with history and see which groups or people enormously profited in that, say, 10 to 20 year slump, and whatever designs of mayhem were created in order to bring this about.
Every 20 years, Ron, they pay off one of the Illuminati families. They take turns.
They must do this, and then they go out and foister their mayhem on everybody. But one thing surprises me in closing. There's still a lot of good, honest businessmen in this country that have a bit of money. They're not multi-billionaires, but they're small potatoes as compared to some. I wonder what it's going to take for some of these people to finally say, hey, get together as a consortium, meet somewhere, get a few bucks together. These guys see the disaster that is ensuing and going to continue, and just take matters into their own hands and get 2 or 3-man hit teams to go out and go to work. I'm just wondering why people haven't undertaken that. The other people of Europe, for example, I mean, those guys are in a different situation, but the same plight as we are over here. I'm just surprised nobody has taken any of these people to task and just get fed up with it and say enough's enough. What's it going to take for these people? Live in cardboard box and eating out of a dumpster? You know, there's too many.
You want me to answer that, Ron?
Yes, I do.
Okay. What it's going to take for these people, and I mentioned this on my program today, what we're seeing is the first wave. There are 2 more waves of this coming. There's another mortgage reset going to happen this year on the subprimes and option loans, and also the commercial wave is going to hit. What it's going to take is when these people get their savings ripped out from under them and they're out in the streets holding a sign by the freeway, then and probably only then are they going to get it. Because what the mindset of the American people is they're as free as the amount of money they have in the bank. And once that money is depleted, they're no longer free. That's how they equate their freedom, is with their trinkets and baubles. You take that away from them, then they're going to realize that they've got a problem. It's
That's
only
right.
the choice few, like yourself, Don, myself, and a number of others, that have been able to see through this, put on the glasses, if you will, and see what's going on. Very few people can see it, but more and more of them are waking up. And when the when they're thrown out of their houses, when the grocery store shelves run dry, and their savings and their IRAs and their 401ks are depleted, that's when they start looking for answers in the right place. So that's my answer to that.
Well,
yeah, well, they're stealing the pension funds already. I mean, this has been going on for a number of years.
Well, that's true, Don, but they don't. But the American public doesn't know it's being stolen. They just think it vanishes like a fart in the wind. Okay, they have no idea that this is being stolen. The insiders that are running Wall Street are the ones that are controlling this. Okay, that money is disappearing. They're cashing out and stealing that money.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like Leo brought up the issue of gold and silver. Well, they've stolen that, too. Okay? I don't know if you've tried to buy gold. I hear people advertising it, but buying gold on a piece of paper and actually having physical possession are two different things. They've been doing this for quite some time.
I haven't tried to buy any lately. I've heard they're charging pretty high premiums for it, and I know that it's getting rather scarce. So, you know, but again, that's by design as well. Mm-hmm. They're artificially holding the price of gold down so people will, you know, cash it in to offset whatever they're losing in the stock market or this and that, and then the elites are stepping in buying it up. That's why it's getting scarce. I believe that the mint has stopped. They've got a sign up there temporarily. They've ceased, you know, making these $20 gold pieces. Or 50, I'm not sure which one it is. I think it's a $20 gold piece. And also the silver. They've put a halt to it for the time being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Walter Bierman was telling me they buy an ounce of gold for 30 cents.
That's true, they do.
Yeah.
And you know how they do it? Is that it costs them 3 cents to print a $100 bill.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's $1,000 for an ounce, or $1,000 for an ounce of gold, then it costs 30 cents for 10 $100 bills. And that's how they buy it.
Mm-hmm.
What it costs the rest of it, an actual $1,000, it costs them 30 cents. And with that, you can do all the manipulating you wish.
Plus, they charge 18% per annum on the interest on that money, too.
On the borrowed money?
Yes.
Well,
there's a fee that the government has to pay, which we end up paying, of course.
Well, they're dumping so much debt on the American taxpayer. All this is going to come to a head because we've seen that meter. We've all seen that meter that says, you know, the national debt's $9,300,000,000 or whatever the heck it is. Okay. Well, this is it's gone off the charts because they're talking about, you know, $1 trillion here, $2.5 trillion there. I don't see them actually adding it on to that little meter that's running. In essence, between the bailout, the stimulus package, the $75 billion for the mortgage stimulus, plus the bailout, I believe is now up to what $2.5 trillion, and there seems to be no end in sight. Well, where is that going? I don't see them putting that on the back of this little meter. Do you?
Yeah. No, no.
It's just the same thing as the M3 that they did. You know that vanished in 2006. Nobody knows how much money's in circulation. It's only due to our naivety and the fact that we have good faith of the dollar itself that it has any value at all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we know the big money that they're skimming off of their bogus derivatives and hedge funds is making these banks rich. In the first quarter of 2008. Ending March 31st, J.P. Morgan had almost $90 trillion of assets. $90 trillion. And they're part of the bailout. They're trying to give them a few billion dollars here and there.
Well, you know, Leo had mentioned earlier when he called in, you know, what is the value? The value of that piece of paper is nothing. If you want to go to the core issue of what the value is, it's what's being traded. And what's being traded is that contract that is signed by a viable borrower which is agreeing to pledge his labor in whatever capacity he would, you know, whatever he does for a living, to use that, you know, casino chip, i.e. an FRN, to pay back this loan. But it's actually the labor. That's how they're able to trade these. They'll take these CDOs, they'll take 100 mortgages, package them all up with a bow on the top, and sell them off to an investor. Then they turn around and buy a credit default swap as an insurance policy on it. So when it defaults, then the insurance company, like AIG, pays off. That's where they ran into the problem. But that's also why the mortgager, the guy that owns the house, if he gets behind on his payments, they won't take partial payments. They don't care if he defaults, because the credit default swap pays off on it. But the bottom line and the core issue is the only thing of any value is that signature of the borrower pledging his labor on his note. It's not the FRN. That is just the illusion of money.
Yes, I understand that. Of course. Okay. Ron, anything else?
I'll be very quick. I have a very good friend of mine named John. He and I are both going to be organic farmers here, and I'm doing some background into this one bill. I'm waiting for the results of congressional response for something I'm checking into. So he calls me up and he says his wife got booted out of a company they shut down. She'd been 27 years, and she has a 401 or something like that, but hers was safe for some reason. She must have gone on to the Jewish 401 plan or something, because nothing was touched in it. He says, I want to convert that to gold. I says, hold it. Don't leave the house. Don't hang the phone up. He wanted to buy a piece of bullion. I says, don't do it. Here's why. Forget the gold certificates on paper. You could use them for toilet paper after a while. You'll never see the gold. Second of all, what are you going to do hauling down a 60-pound piece of bullion to go down and get yourself a 10-pound of hamburger? You're going to have to shave a piece off, and somebody's got to pay for the assay, and it's going to be you. I says, even if you would get a whole bunch of quarter-ounce sovereigns, say you'd get a sack full of them, you go down to the store to want to try to buy something, they look at it and they say, hey, buddy, what are you, nuts? What are we going to do with it? So the problem of getting all these coins and silver hoarded like a miser is going to be more than what people think, because these companies can't keep up with the supply that these people want to buy now. Then it has to be turned into something usable in some fashion. You're going to have to trade it for something to somebody that wants to accept it. And both of you agree at some measure of value for each of the things you want to deal with. You've got to measure the value of the gold, and that person's got to measure the value of what is being traded and come up with some kind of harmony there. And I don't see that happening with all these people that got sacks of coins laying all over the place. So part of this is not really the way to do things. As for myself, I have no credit card, no mortgages, no nothing, property enough here, and a few bucks here and there in the bank, which I'm going to eventually draw out of there. But if it would come to the point of dire bleeding to death economic failure, where everybody's getting bled so badly that they can't even pay their taxes, don't come down here and try to take this house. There's going to be a problem. Now, if you take 100 million houses away from people, what are you going to do with them? That's another thing. You have to think in practical terms. Now, if my house can be taken, so could some rich person's house be taken. You know, rich, by some definitions, to you might be different than my definition or your guest definition. But people are going to have to be more dependent on themselves. They're going to have to be totally undependent on government. They're just going to have to, you know, brave it out.
Well, I think we are that now.
Well, I think it's going to get more braver out as time goes on, because I don't see coming out of this anytime soon, if at all, and we're going to be permanently crippled.
Well, we've got to put a stop to the corruption.
I have my methods, but I don't want to go ahead and mention them over the air.
Yeah.
My methods work, but they're a tad on the harsh side. But then again, what's been happening to us? You don't think they'd kill you and throw you out and kick you down the side of the road? They just do it for amusement, let alone for any insurance benefit.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
you see that all the time.
I'm not going to speculate on what they're going to do. I'm going to take control of my own life.
Yeah, that's what I got to do. I can't worry about it. I heard a woman on the air the other day was practically in tears, and she couldn't even continue her discourse on the air. She was worried about Hillary Clinton going over to China and telling her, you know, that we'll give you eminent domain over all the property in the United States if you lend us all this money. And this woman is on a follow-up program on a weekend that I just really don't tune into. I just tuned in by chance at two different times. And I thought, that woman, I mean, old people have a very, very terrible fear rate. They do. I knew that from law enforcement days. And I could just see that Chinaman over there figuring, who sent this nut over here? Let's give her something to eat and tea and get her the hell out of China. Because this Chinese aren't as bad
as you think they
are. Do you
actually think they better?
Yeah, but that woman, the only reason, I don't know, you know, they must get the nuttiest people with the most serious head issues and put them in government. They have to, because nobody else wants them.
Yeah.
And then they go out and wreak
their
havoc.
Well, listen, Ron, we
got to
cut you short here. We got to close out the show, but I want to thank you for calling in.
Okay. Take care, guys. I'll be in touch.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, Michael, yeah, we're not certain of this thing about China. To me, it sounds like another rumor.
Let me just say that about or this about that is that you know, and this is speculation, but in my critical mind, I'm saying that she went over there. They may have given her that tool to use, but I'm believing that China flatly refused her, regardless of what she offered them, because the Fed just bought $300 billion worth of the Treasury bonds, which is exactly the reason that she went over there. So if the Fed wound up buying the bonds, which they did, then you can pretty well rest assured that whatever offer she made them, they did not accept.
Yeah. But keep in mind, even though she went to China, China's being controlled by Britain. Trust me on that.
I have to go down the rabbit hole on that one. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I recommend to you, as I do to my listening audience and my researcher friends, go online. Actually, you can go to Ken Adachi's site. He's got a copy of the Union Jack posted there as a PDF. Read that. It makes a lot of sense, and I'm not basing everything I'm saying on what's in that book, but I find it highly coincidental that the argument stands on its own, and it matches many of the things that I've discovered in my research. I could spend another 50 years researching and draw the same conclusions. So I recommend that. The Union
Jack. Well, unfortunately, at this particular point in time, I don't have a heck of a lot of time to do diligent research. I'm working, I'm doing 3 hours a day, and you know what preparation goes into
mm-hmm.
that. Plus, I'm doing a show on the weekend, so I don't have anywhere near as much time as I used to the research, but I will look into it.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time. Time flies when we're having fun, as usual. And how's your website now? I haven't even...
My website is still down. I have to redesign it, and I have to purchase another server to get it up. So I'm looking at probably it's going to be down for another 30 days, I would say, safely.
Okay.
I haven't really used it much. Even if it were up, I wouldn't be posting much. I've been busier than heck, but I'm mm-hmm. getting that problem ironed out.
Okay, but people can go listen to your show at Liberty. Newsradio.com.
That's correct. Yeah.
And
by the way, my website, when it does go back up, it will no longer be the AmericanAwakening.org. It'll be the AmericanAwakening.us.
Oh, okay. Very good. AmericanAwakening.us.
Right. Okay. But it'll probably be another month.
Okay. Well, very good. Now, you're on Oracle, too, on the weekend, right? Is that on
right.
Saturday or Sunday or both?
It's 4 to 6 Central Time Saturdays.
Saturday, okay.
Yeah, I was doing the entire weekend, but now I dropped it down. I don't want to work 7 days a week. You know, it's a little bit much. I have to do laundry and stuff like normal human beings.
Can't do a radio show, got to do laundry. Okay. All right, just kidding. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on. I know you did 3 hours earlier today, so I appreciate it, especially so late in the evening. And look forward to your next visit, whenever that might be. We'll have to arrange something. But it's I always get a lot of positive feedback after you've been on the show. And
well, it should be a real barn burner tonight with the Jesuits and the Zionists. You know, I guess I'm going to have to put a little time aside and go down the Jesuit rabbit hole and, you know, see what happens.
Yeah, well, just Google Skull and Bones, and that'll take you somewhere, too.
Okay.
All right, Michael. Well, thanks a lot for being on the show. It's time for us to say goodnight to our listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Michael Herzog. Listen to his show, The American Awakening, Monday through Friday on LibertyNewsRadio.com. In the meantime, I would like to thank Doug and Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendricks for the sound, our callers tonight, Leo and Ron, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Tune in again tomorrow night. Our special guest will be Ken Adachi. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.